Radio Prague News. Prime Minister Petr Nečas has met with President Václav Klaus to hand over the resignation of Trade and Industry Minister Martin Kocourek. A number of regions around the country report smog problems with dust concentration levels far exceeding the permitted norm. And President Václav Klaus has said that Europe, including the Czech Republic, is likely to face a lost decade as a result of the continent's deep financial and economic crisis. Prime Minister Petr Nečas has met with President Václav Klaus to hand over the resignation of Trade and Industry Minister Martin Kocourek. Mr. Kocourek resigned last week amidst allegations of corruption and financial irregularities. The Prime Minister is likely to propose a successor to the post from his own Civic Democratic Party within a week's time. Among the possible candidates for the position are Zbigniew Stanjura, head of the party's deputies group in the lower house, and one of the party's leading economic experts, Michal Doktor. A number of regions around the country report smog problems with dust concentration levels far exceeding the permitted norm. The eastern city of Ostrava remains on high smog alert, and conditions are bad also in Prague, in North and East Bohemia, and in South Moravia. Smog regulation measures are in place in North Moravia, restricting traffic and production in the big industrial plants in the area. People with chronic health problems, children and the elderly have been advised to stay indoors as much as possible. The Czech Hydrometeorological Institute says the situation is not likely to improve in the coming days. President Václav Klaus has said that Europe, including the Czech Republic, is likely to face a lost decade as a result of the continent's deep financial and economic crisis. In an article for the weekly Týden, Mr. Klaus blamed the situation on the organization of the European Union, where the dictate of politics prevails over economy. Unless Europe undergoes a deep transformation, Mr. Klaus says, it will experience economic marginalization. Mr. Klaus compared the lost decade he envisages to the 1990s in Japan, a decade without economic growth, with permanent cuts, austerity measures and social unrest. Mr. Klaus's views are often labeled as Eurosceptic, but he prefers the term Eurorealist. The Finance Ministry has denied responsibility for the Czech Republic's failure to meet a deadline confirming participation in judicial proceedings in Switzerland concerning suspected fraud and money laundering in one of the Czech Republic's biggest energy firms, the Mostecká uhelná coal mining company. Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík told Czech television on Sunday the Czech Republic may lose over 11 billion crowns in assets frozen by the Swiss government earlier this year in connection with the case. Switzerland began a probe into the case in 2005 on suspicion that the company's directors were embezzling huge sums of money, some of which were allegedly being transferred to Swiss accounts within an extensive money laundering scheme. 7 people have been charged in connection with the case. The young male gorilla born at Prague Zoo last week has been transported to Stuttgart after repeated attempts to reunite the newborn with its mother failed on Friday, the zoo's director Miroslav Bobek has said. The mother, named Bikira, showed no interest in the baby, which has had to be kept in an incubator. The baby gorilla, named Tano, which means the fifth in Swahili, will be raised among a group of gorillas in the German city. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The coming days are expected to be partly cloudy with daytime temperatures around 5 degrees Celsius. My name is Pavla Horáková and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, military officials and war veterans from the Czech Republic and Commonwealth countries mark Veterans Day at Prague's Olšany Commonwealth War Cemetery. We'll bring you the sports news and in one-on-one we meet the Czech filmmaker Alice Nellis. Among other things, she explains why so many of her movies revolve around couples.
You are somebody's kid. At a certain age you decide if you are gonna or not gonna be a parent. Through your life, you look for a partner and you might find some, you might not.
That's in one-on-one coming up shortly and we'll end today's show with a Czech lesson as usual. Stay with us. The The military section of Prague's Olšany Cemetery filled with foreign uniforms on Sunday as soldiers of the Commonwealth of Nations marked Remembrance Day and commemorated the sacrifices of their countrymen who lost their lives on Czech territory during the Second World War. Christian Falvey reports.
Around 200 civilians and soldiers of the Commonwealth of Nations gathered in Prague's largest cemetery on the second Sunday of November for a ceremony to pay respects to the hundreds of their fallen compatriots who have lain here since the Second World War. There are 264 British soldiers buried in the Olšany Cemetery around the large monument of the cross and sword. Many of them are Cypriots, Egyptians, South Africans, and Canadians, most of whom were either prisoners of war who died in the camps or pilots who died during air raids. Andrew Shepherd is the British Army's defence attaché in Prague.
It's principally, this service is a Commonwealth service. So there are representatives here from Australia, from Ghana, from India, Pakistan and some of the Commonwealth countries.
The ceremony and the laying of wreaths was led by an Anglican priest and all in attendance observed 2 minutes of silence. Among them were representatives of the Czech Army and surviving Czech veterans of the Second World War.
There's a very proud history that the Royal Air Force and the Czech airmen who flew with the Royal Air Force in the Second World War, there was a very strong link there that endures today.
More than 2,500 Czechoslovaks served in the Royal Air Force during World War II, and more than 500 lost their lives in sorties and in the Battle of Britain. Many of them, like pilot Colonel Jaroslav Hofrichter, who was present at the ceremony, returned to Czechoslovakia after the war only to be persecuted by the communist government. Colonel Hofrichter escaped to Britain via Palestine and Cape Town in 1940 at the age of 20 and joined the 311th Bombardier Squadron of the RAF as a gunner.
In 1938, we made a promise to the Republic and to the President that we would protect the country, and we kept our promise.
The Czech Republic held its primary ceremony marking Armistice Day last Friday on November 11th with a service at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier on the hill of Vítkov in Prague.
My thanks to Christian Falvey for that report. Up next, a summary of the sports news with Jan Wellinger.
And we begin with football. First in sport, the Czech Republic will try to secure a fifth consecutive spot in the European Football Championships on Tuesday with a draw or win against Montenegro in Podgorica. On Friday, the Czech team, playing its best match to date under often criticized head coach Michal Bílek, turned out a brilliant performance in the first leg, defeating the Balkan rivals 2-0. Goals in the second half of the game came from Václav Bilaš and Tomáš Sivok, as well as energized play by team captain and key playmaker Tomáš Rosický. Those helped tip the game in the Czechs' favor. And after the match, here's what team captain Tomáš Rosický had to say.
The way to win is pretty clear, to limit your opponent's chances. We kept those at a minimum, and that's the key to winning. It's not something I made up, but is proven historically. I've been in two playoffs before, and that's the way to do it, obviously.
Besides being an important result for the squad, the game was also positive for goalie Petr Čech, who played comfortably in a protective carbon fiber face mask after having broken his nose the weekend before. He stopped a key opportunity, and keeping a clean sheet, no doubt, helped frustrate his opponents. Now all that leaves the Czechs in good shape ahead of Tuesday's match, leaving Montenegro's coach Branko Brnovic little more than to say that he still feels his squad still has a chance. In front of a frenetic home crowd, he made clear he believes his squad can beat the Czechs 3-0 to advance on aggregate. And Czech captain, team captain Rosický was asked to respond to that.
For sure they have what it takes to score. On the other hand, I'm not going to comment on what our opponent says. I'm not in the least bit interested. We're going to focus on what we need to do. If they are betting on the atmosphere at home, sure, things are going to heat up, but we're experienced enough to handle it.
And that final key playoff match on Tuesday kicks off in Podgorica at 20:15 local time. Staying with football, Plzeň currently in fourth spot in the Gambrinus Liga in the Czech Republic, down second league Sokolov in the third round on the Ondrášovka or Czech Cup, despite missing four key players in Montenegro with the national team. The team won by a score of 3-1, with Gyuriš scoring the opener in the 18th minute on a pass from Horvat and Hora later scoring two. The lower league Sokolov were able to get one back in the 74th minute, but never proved a serious threat. Turning to tennis now, Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych, the world number 7, was outclassed on Saturday at the Paribas Masters in Paris, an ATP World Tour Masters 1000 event. The player lost 6-4, 6-3 to Swiss player Roger Federer in just 80 minutes. The Czech has now faced the former world number 1 in 14 career matchups, winning 4 but losing 10 against the Swiss player. And finally, ice hockey. Russia won the four-nation Karjala Cup on Sunday after Alexei Morozov scored in overtime to clinch a 4-3 victory over the Czech Republic. The Czechs had led the game 2-0 with early goals from Jan Bulis and Pavel Brendl. Russia equalized, though, through Oleg Saprykin and Sergei Mozyakin in the second period. Denis Zaripov gave Russia a 3-2 lead in the third before Yaroslav Bednar equalized with less than 5 minutes left. That's a sport for today.
Jan Wellinger there with the sports news coming your way on Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, as promised, we meet Alice Nelis, one of a small number of prominent female Czech movie directors. She has just released her fifth feature film, and she is Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's edition of One on One.
With dramas like Eeny Meeny, Little Girl Blue, and Mamas and Papas, Alice Nelis has become one of the best-known Czech filmmakers of her generation. The director and screenwriter, who's 40, is now back at the box office with Perfect Days, a comedy adapted from the stage. Over coffee at a Prague shopping centre, we discussed her latest movie, her approach to filmmaking, the Lidice project, and more. But my first question to Alice Nelis was what had drawn her to film in the first place.
I loved film already as a kid, then as a teenager, but never really thought this is for me. Till today, I like to see films. I'm a good public for a film. But I never really thought about it. I didn't know anybody who makes films. As a kid, I grew up in a small town. So only when I finished the university here in Prague and already had some people that worked in films, it kind of became an option. And so I started to think about it just a year when I applied to FAMU, which was, I think I was like 26, late.
You had studied English and American studies at Charles University. Did that help you when it came, that literature background, when it came to making films?
The film, it's a story told by pictures and music. So, yeah, at the beginning there's a story. So studying literature is a kind of where it starts. Just the means are different. It's a story. And also it helped practically because, especially for script writing, there is not some real school here or books. So when I was studying at FAMU, the most sources were in English.
When you made your first film, Eeny Meeny is the title in English, in 1999, there were very few other Czech female filmmakers. In fact, very few come to mind now, apart from Věra Kytilová and a few others. Did you have a sense that you were entering a kind of boys' club when you made your first movie?
I didn't really, because when you are a director, it's a kind of lonely individual job. You are just one director there. So I was always with the female director. But it's true, there is not many of them, or I would rather say there wasn't. The generation that comes after me, there is more girls, and they're very good. If you know Mira Furnay, Marta Nováková, Jitka Rudolfová, Karin Babinská, I think the number is growing. I think the women just start to realize that directing film is not as heavy work, and it's a normal job as any other job.
Looking back over your filmography, do you see any thread through those films? One thing that strikes me as a viewer is that a lot of the films are about relationships and a lot about couples.
Well, we do live mostly in couples. So it seems such a big part of our life that any story you say kind of touches on it. You are somebody's kid. At a certain age, you decide if you are going to or not going to be a parent. And through your life, you look for a partner, and you might find some, you might not. So no matter from where I look at life, it always comes to this. And also, I think women are more prone to talk and explore feelings that are within, not so much the reality that is outside, but more what's happening inside one person, inside a group of people. So I think part of it is the natural fact that I am a woman. Part of it is that it's a theme that seems to be running under most of other themes.
Are there any directors that you feel a particular affinity with? For example, I read one review that compared your films to the work of Mike Leigh, who is a great British director with a very naturalistic style.
Well, it's a great compliment, but I would never dare to do that because he is a genius. And I admire his films. I think a lot of people who do things from, who write them also, you know, who write a script and then shoot it, they tend to be more personal. Not necessarily autobiographic, but personal in a sense that it's about the world, you know, about people you come in a close contact with. And it's something that interests me when I can go to a cinema to kind of avoid reality, to, you know, for a little time, forget about it, or I can go to a cinema to explore it. And when I want to explore it, I want the exploration be personal.
You were meant to make the film Lidice about the notorious Nazi massacre of World War II, which I guess was a kind of national film project in the same way that the Polish film Katyn was a kind of film of national importance. In the end, you couldn't make it because you were ill. Was that a great disappointment to you?
I wouldn't say so, because I think it was just time when it was necessary to make a decision, and I made it. I'm very happy the way I made it. It's at some point, there is no need to worry about certain things. If your health is in danger, then that's what you have to care about. And for me, at the actual moment, it was a big relief that the whole project didn't collapse, because the financing of the film was very, you know, very complicated, and the possibility of postponing the shooting might endanger it. So I was much more worried about the film not being shot, that if it's not exactly me who will shoot it. I think the theme was more important than the fact that I would do it.
I was very surprised to read recently that you haven't seen the film, given your deep involvement in the early stages of the project.
Well, I think that's actually the reason, because I wrote a script, and I had to leave the project just about a month before shooting. So at that point, the picture was made in my mind. And I don't think I would be objective at this point, because every director works differently and must do it according to his vision. So that's one reason why I want to have bigger time perspective. And the second reason is that for the year, every journalist asked me this question, and imagine my situation. Maybe I will love the film, and that would be great. I would say how much I love it, and it would be my wish. But since I imagine it differently, I will probably have a different opinion, and I would never talk badly about my colleagues. And on the other hand, I would never want to lie.
Your new movie, Perfect Days, is based on a play by the Scottish writer Liz Lockhead, and it's about a woman whose biological clock is ticking and she meets a younger man. What was it that attracted you to that material?
I was offered to direct the play at the Nazar Bradley Theatre some 9 years ago, and at that time it seemed kind of a new subject. Till when I was young, women over 40 were practically dead. The times are changing. Women after 40 are not dead anymore, but they are still not used to the new situation. So it seemed it's a new theme. I like new themes. There are other new themes in it. It's the question of gay people and their relation to parentship. Other new themes about people who are actually successful in their work and still it's not enough for happiness. So that was my reason then. And then, you know, the play was fairly successful. And it just brought me to the idea that probably we hit something that is kind of sensitive and important. And when the producer, Rudolf Biermann, came with the idea to put it in a film, I said yes, because it gave me an opportunity to try to give it a different visual code and try to explore it one more time with a 10-year gap, which brought the theme to a different level.
How was it working with somebody else's material, given that all of your previous films were written by you?
Well, I wouldn't say yes to direct it at that point when I did. If I didn't feel, you know, I can bring something and I kind of do understand what it is about. And in films I do write my scripts, but in theater I usually work with text of somebody else, so it's not such a new experience, and I still had a chance to write the script. And Liz Loghead gave me quite a freedom, so I took what I felt was the core of the story, and on the other hand, I had a freedom to give it a more film feeling and to use it for what I wanted to create the story from.
Your colleague and friend Jan Sierak announced just a few days ago that he's making his next film in English because of the difficulty of finding funding for a Czech language film. Is that something that you would consider?
I would consider it, but Jan is also a producer and a very good one. I'm not a good producer. I am not a producer. So for me, it would be more a question of finding a foreign producer. So yeah, I would love it, but I'm not so handy as he is. So if I find a producer who will do that, I'll be very happy. But I'm very happy for him because I think he should do it. He would be good in it, and he would succeed.
I know your latest film, Perfect Days, has only just come out. But could I ask you, are you already planning other projects, or do you have anything else in mind that you will do next or in the near future?
I do have some projects ahead, but from my past experience, I start to talk about things only when I know they will happen. And for my winter, I just plan to sit down and write and take care of my kids.
That was Czech film director Alice Nellis, Ian Willoughby's guest on One on One. Now, in the remaining time we have, we're offering you another Czech lesson. In view of its enormous popularity, Radio Prague is currently repeating its Sound Czech miniseries. And today's lesson is with Rosie Johnson. Welcome to another edition of Sound Czech, Radio Prague's Czech language series in which you can learn idioms through song lyrics. Today we'll be listening to a song by Czech rockers Kabát called Kdo si nechce hubu spálit, which translates into English roughly as if you don't want to get into trouble. The phrase to listen out for is Rostou nám tak jako houby po dešti, which comes right at the beginning of the song. Rostou nám tak jako houby po dešti means literally they're growing or they're springing up around us like mushrooms after the rain. You can say that new houses or supermarkets rostou jako houby po dešti when they're being built all over the place. The idiom normally refers to structures or things that have to be built up out of the ground. People can't grow like mushrooms after the rain. They grow, as it happens, jako z vody, or as if out of water, which sounds equally as environmentally friendly. But back to our mushrooms. Before you'd even really started growing, when you were just the smallest embryo in your mother's womb, you were still picking mushrooms in Czech idiom. To si byl ještě na houbách,
translates literally from Czech as "you were still picking mushrooms" and figuratively means something like "you were still a twinkle in your father's eye." But there's a slight difference between the two phrases, because you were already conceived when you were picking mushrooms, whereas the implication is that you weren't when you were a twinkle in your father's eye. And one final bit of Czech mushroom miscellany. Czechs seem to love fungi and going out to find them in the forest, but the word mushrooms, or houby, can be used quite disparagingly in Czech to refer to nonsense or rubbish being spoken. If you're in the middle of expounding one of your brilliant ideas in Czech and someone butts in and says houby, then that means they don't agree with what you're saying at all and they think you're speaking mushrooms. I hope this sound check hasn't just proved to be holby, and that you've learnt some useful phrases pertaining to one of the nation's biggest loves, mushrooms. Until next time though, nasledano, goodbye.
That was Rosie Johnson with Soundcheck, and you will find the entire Soundcheck series at www.radio.cz, along with all of Radio Prague's programmes in text and sound. And I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you, as always. This is Daniela Azarová saying thanks for joining us and take care.